1, 2, 3.
You're listening to Sports Talk Chicago with your host, John Zagluhl.
John, I am fantastic. Thank you for having me. You got an awesome voice, man, and that was a terrific intro. You're like a pro's pro.
You know, that was the first time somebody ever said that, John. No, you're the first person to ever say anything like that. That's very interesting.
You got it, John. Anything for a fellow Chicago guy.
Well, what a great question.
That's a great question. Nobody's actually asked me that.
I like it. What a great question. I never heard that before.
Chase Utley is what? You're saying he's not a Hall of Fame candidate?
You know, it's funny. You may be the only person that I've heard make that connection.
Thank you, John, for having me. I'm doing great. By the way, you have an outstanding voice. Not sure about your face because I haven't met you, but your voice is great.
You're doing a much better job than I ever did. You've had some heavy hitters guests on too, man, so keep up the good work. But it's good to be with you, and I'm ready to talk sports.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zagluhl. Great to have you here. Today's edition of the program. Great to be back. And the Bears have had a lot of news happen in the past week. We'll catch you up in just a moment. Plus, a brand new interview today with Mark Medina of NBA TV and NBA.com. Talk with him about the Bulls' surprising start, who's to beat in the NBA Western Conference, and so much more. It's a great interview that comes your way near the midway point of this show. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluhl. If you want to watch more of this show, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, SportsTalkChicago.com. Well, nice to be back. Did I miss anything? Someone catch me up? You know, usually I start a video with, I want to start today with this again today. I don't know where to start. I'm going to do my best to recount what's happened over the past week and make sense of it. Near the end, we'll talk about the Bears and Cardinals, which should be a colossal loss, but I don't know where to start here. I guess we should go back before Thanksgiving, where Matt Nagy was supposedly going to be fired after the big game. I will always contend that report was true. A lot of Bears media, Bears Twitter, trashed it. Oh, it didn't happen. Bad reporting. The report came from a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. I firmly believe in my heart, I'll always believe in my heart, that the report came out, Bears saw it, not of spite. They chose not to fire Matt Nagy yet. And in the end, I guess I'm grateful. At least, hopefully, I'll be healthier when Matt Nagy does get the boot, and I can make tons of videos about it and bask in the glow of the real problem for the Chicago Bears. That was supposed to happen. I know it. I believe it. Now, I don't have any sourcing. Not an insider here. This is just suspicion. I firmly believe he was supposed to be axed after that game, no matter what. By the way, based on the way the Bears played that game, he should have been axed anyways, but that's besides the point. Matt Nagy should have been fired. And yet we all sit here today still waiting to see if they'd fire him. New report came out today saying that Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy may not be inseparable. They might keep Ryan Pace and bring in a new head coach. Excuse me. Both of them are to blame. You know, I've dealt with my fair share of Nagy defenders, Pace defenders too. Everybody says it's the quarterback, right? Before it was Mitch Trubisky. Mitch is gone. Now, oh, it's Matt Nagy. When will we come to an agreement? It's everybody. Not just Nagy. It's not just the quarterback. It's everybody. Everyone. All the way from the top. All the way. Who hired Ryan Pace? Ownership. And Ted Phillips, who hired Matt Nagy. Ownership, Pace, Ted Phillips. Everybody played a role in that hiring. Oh, he's an offensive guru. Great coach. Yeah, good one. Never met an offensive guru who blamed his quarterback for not performing. The and shipped him out of town, brought in his own quarterback, whom he wanted in the draft, and that's not working out too well either, yet. You know, Andy Reid doesn't just go through quarterbacks. Or worse off, blame it on them. Hey, Alex Smith, yeah, you sucked, and it's your fault. We'll bring in Patrick Mahomes. No, Alex Smith had a great year. It brought in Mahomes to learn. He did. Goodbye, Alex Smith. It worked. That quarterback worked in that system. Why? Well, Andy Reid's a good coach. He knows what it means to get the best out of a quarterback. Not forcing them to conform to you. You, instead, conform to them. The Bears have never done that under Matt Nagy. Not once. Look, I'm not going to say there's sabotage going on, but I find it a bit odd how on Thanksgiving, Andy Dalton got to throw the ball a lot, didn't he? 300 yards, one touchdown, had a great game. I was happy. My question is, though, why does Justin Fields not throw the ball that much? Why is he not throwing the ball 30, 40 times a game? Why? You know, that's why there's a number disparity. Now, Fields hasn't done great, I understand, but there's a numerical disparity between Andy Dalton and Justin Fields. See, you all thought I'd side with Andy Dalton. Not so fast. I'm looking at this objectively. Why does Andy Dalton have better numbers than Justin Fields? By numbers, I mean rate stats. Obviously not totals. Why? Sure, it could be that Dalton's a bit more experienced. Been around longer, he could handle NFL defenses and bad NFL offensive line, sure. What about the alternative? Why is Andy Dalton doing better than Justin Fields when he plays? Why does he have a better completion percentage? Does he have the same amount of touchdowns? Well, that's right, because in three games started, is 112 passing attempts. Fields has started in 8 games. He's attempted the pass 198 times. 8 games, 8 starts, 198 attempts. It's about 25 a game, give or take. Not really a lot when you think about it. How about we go 112 divided by 3? 3 starts for Andy Dalton, 112 attempts, 37 attempts. Simply put, when Andy Dalton's in, the Bears pass the ball more. When Justin Fields is in, they rarely pass the ball. And I'd love to know the explanation for that, too. The run game's been the same all year. It's been effective. So there should be no reason why you run more with Fields than you do Dalton. That has nothing to do with it. It's a matter of confidence and trust. And I know Justin Fields has not necessarily performed to the point where you could sit there and trust him like a veteran, like Dalton. But I thought the whole narrative was you're playing him so he could get reps. So which is it? Why are you playing him then? Why are you playing Justin Fields if you're purposefully making sure he gets no reps or limited reps, reduced reps? Why? Why is Justin Fields averaging around 24 to 25 throws per game? And Andy Dalton's in, that's 37. How does that make sense? How can you make a comparison? How do you know who's better? And one of them's thrown the ball more than the other. The whole push to put in Justin Fields was to get the guy reps. And when his backup is in, he gets more reps in-game than Justin Fields. Does that make sense to anybody? Does that add up in your head? Rookie quarterback, in to get reps, trying to get better, trying to show growth, throw less. Use them less. Andy Dalton, veteran, know what he could do, run into basically be a backup, throw the ball more. Why did the game plans change? He's down the quarterback like that. Should be the other way around. Seriously, I mean, typically in the NFL, you have your backup come in. It's more of a running football game. Think in the past. And, like, great example would be Tavarius Jackson, Seattle Seahawks. Whenever he came into a game, or really Russell Wilson, Wilson got hurt, it became a running game. Think of the Bears, Jason Campbell. Remember Jason Campbell? He came in. It became a running game. Everybody knew Campbell couldn't throw the ball past 20 yards. Time to run the football. See what you could do. It'd be a waste of a game. Chase Daniel. Would Chase Daniel put up any numbers? Would Matt Nagy throw the ball with Chase Daniel 50 times? No. Run the football. Backups in. But yet here, it's the opposite. Rookie quarterback. Trying to develop him. Let's throw the ball less. That makes no sense. Absolutely no sense. And that's just a small thing. That's a small thing that I've missed over the past week. That game was a freaking joke. You know what I find despicable, too? Why the hell are you celebrating? I really want to swear right now, but I know because of FCC regulations, I won't. But why in the hell are you celebrating? What do you have to celebrate about? You beat the freaking Lions 0-10-1. On a field goal. That should have been a blowout game. Yay, we kicked a 28-yarder to win. Are you kidding me? That's what we're happy about? That's what we're celebrating? Oh, open up the doors to Club Dub. Yay, Matt Nagy. What? Hey, the Bears are only one game out of a playoff spot. That's the conclusion you take from that game. That's it. Not pathetic showing. Barely won. Is Matt Nagy fired? No, it's Club Dub. Bears win. One game out of a playoff spot. They are not going anywhere. And if you were actually impressed by a win like that, go root for another team. Because obviously your standards have sunk to zero. Obviously. No other explanation. And the players could be so happy they could celebrate. I don't care. Good for you. You beat the Lions. John, you've never played in the NFL. You don't know what you're talking about. Maybe I don't. Here's what I do know, though. The Lions are the worst team in football. You have a rookie quarterback whom you didn't play because he was hurt. You let Andy Dalton play better than Justin Fields when the Bears faced the Lions earlier. You let him throw the ball more. It took you a long drive at the end of the game, and it took a 28-yard field goal to win. Yeah, sorry, I'm going to have a problem with that. How pathetic. Seriously. How pathetic. That's what you're celebrating. And we hear about the fire Nagy chants all over. Look, at his son's football game, that's a bit much, I'll admit. Everywhere else, keep talking. Keep talking. On his son's football game. Even I got boundaries. Even I got a heart. But everywhere else, keep talking. Keep talking and saying it out loud. And have everybody hear it. Have it be a news story. Everybody needs to know. Like what I said last year, boycott. If you boycott, let them see it. Make them lose money. There's no shame in doing that. But unfortunately, Bears fans are loyal to a fault, and they never would do that. I'm not buying merch. I'm not going to games. This team sucks. Needs to be changed. Make your voices heard. Have everybody see how much of a joke this is. You know, I don't see any other fan base around the NFL going to Bulls games and chanting to fire their coach. Keep it up. That's great. Illini games. Keep it up. just remember, for those of you who've known me for a while, I said last year, Matt Nagy's the problem. Nobody listened. It's Mitch Trubisky's fault. Well, you could say Mitch had his limitations. I was on Matt Nagy. You don't see that by now, you got a problem. Celebrating over beating the Lions? Are you kidding me? You're going to get your ass handed to you this weekend. I don't care who's playing. I don't care if it's Kyler Murray. I don't care if it's Justin Fields or Andy Dalton. You're going to get your ass handed to you. But no, let's celebrate a Thanksgiving win against the freaking Detroit Lions. Yay for us. Party it up. How pathetic. The Bears are not winning this game this weekend. I hope you understand that. I wouldn't even waste your time watching it. Oh. Probably going to be Kyler Murray coming back off injury. Versus, right now, Andy Dalton. Dalton's taking first-team reps right now. Who do you think's going to win? Arizona, top defense, good run game, good quarterback when healthy. Who do you think's going to win that game? Really think the Bears are going to pull it out? No. It ain't going to happen. I don't care if they're at home. No, oh, Arizona's a warm weather team. They play in the dome. Doesn't matter. Arizona's winning this game. And as for the Bears, if they somehow sneak into the playoffs, good for them, I guess. If they somehow win out and make it in, congratulations. I mean, there's nothing you could do about that. I hope, though, that ownership's mind is done. There's no changes. There's no audibles. There's no, well, if you do this, maybe we'll keep you. No. Everybody needs to go immediately. Everybody. You know, guys are quitting on this team. How the hell did the Bears have so many guys on IR last week? Hey, this is like the last year Mark Trestman again. Oh, Brandon Marshall, Martellus Bennett, everybody's on the IR. Jay Cutler, everybody. What? For what? Because you freaking lost the team. Nobody wants to play for you anymore. Same thing here. Nobody wants to play for Matt Nagy. And everybody could say, because I saw Eddie Jackson come out and say, oh, stop with the fire Nagy chant. That's so wrong. We saw the report. The report said players don't support Nagy anymore. And it came from last year. And they kept him around. What does that tell you about the Chicago Bears? How they treat their players? This place looks like a dumpster fire right now. What free agent would want to come here? Let's see. I'm going to go to the Bears, where they don't even prioritize their players. They're more worried about their head coach. Or I could go to any other team in the NFL where it'd be different. Where my needs would matter. The team's needs would matter. See what I mean? Let's not even forget about the fact that they handled this entire thing poorly. The whole Matt Nagy report. Poorly. Nagy didn't even go out and answer questions. Chris Tabor did. Nagy canceled meetings and all kinds of stuff happening behind the scenes we didn't even know about, and then he's still there for now. Okay, well, on January 10th, that morning, he's going to be fired. I don't get what's been accomplished. I don't get why this just continues to happen year in and year out. But I'm pretty sick of it. Aren't you? Aren't we all sick of this? Why the hell do the Bears have to be so mediocre each and every year? Why is Matt Nagy always being stuck up for? I mean, this is only recent. Fire Nagy chance. Last year was way different. Matt Nagy, offensive genius. Now we see with Justin Fields how things are going, and now everybody has caught on. Should have caught on before. For those of you who are late to the party, thanks for coming. Vance is a horrible head coach and a laughing stock for a team. How do you think the NFL views the Bears? Look around the league at all these great teams. Great systems, even. Look at New England. They're winning. No Tom Brady. Who cares? Winning with a rookie quarterback. Tampa Bay, winning. Kansas City, still winning. And the Bears. Even the Browns are 500. Telling you, the Bears are the Browns now. Said that for about a year and a half, and I mean it when I say it. The Bears are the Browns. Just a real shame how low this franchise has gone. How much lower they're going to go before real change comes. And how, even though they've been low, no changes happen. Matt Nagy needs to be fired. He should have been fired a long time ago. Still here. Now we're hearing reports, oh, maybe Ryan Pace will stick around. Ryan Pace needs to go too. The hell has he done? Oh, he got a great third-round pick. I don't care. Traded up for Justin Fields. Again, too little, too late. He hired Matt Nagy, or had a say in it. And look at this roster right now. Look at this team. All the money that's been spent. The veterans that suck. What's supposed to come? Nothing. Who does that reflect on? The GM. Think about this. Ryan Pace has been here during Mark Trestman, John Fox, Matt Nagy. Three different coaches. Two different quarterbacks now. There is no GM in football that gets that many chances to get it right. Still fails. Gets another chance. They all need to go. Shouldn't be fighting in the comments or fighting on Twitter. Oh, well, Nagy's more responsible than Pace. Pace should stay. Nagy should go. Nagy should stay. Pace should... No, no, no. They all should go. That's it. Had enough. They suck. And I hope that Justin Fields is okay. That echoed what I said from the beginning of the year. Shouldn't play him. Gonna get hurt. You could chide that remark all you want. Well, it's the NFL. He's going to get hurt. Well, now he is hurt. Because, get this, no protection. Huh. Where have you heard that before? Shouldn't be running out of rookie quarterback when you have no protection for him. You know, he leads the league in fumbles. Again, no protection. Did you miss me? You could tell me. You could be honest with me. Did you miss me? Happy to be back. Appreciate all of you who reached out with well wishes. And for everybody's sake, hope the Bears bite the bullet. Fire Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace. More to come here on Sports Talk Chicago. My interview with Mark Medina comes up next, so stay tuned. Talk Chicago. I'm John Zaglul, and we are back and ready for today's special guest. He's an NBA.com writer, contributor to NBA TV, and he's covered basketball for 13 years. Please welcome Mark Medina to the program. Mark, it's great to have you on. How are you?
John, always good talking with you.
So, Mark, what's your evaluation of the Bulls so far this season?
Wow, they've been pretty impressive. I thought going into this season, clearly they're not going to be a lottery team anymore. I thought that they were going to be in the mix as one of the playoff teams, but I didn't see them as part of the first tier of the Eastern Conference teams. But I think that they have thrust themselves in there. You know, part of it's a little bit of Milwaukee hasn't played its best basketball. The Brooklyn Nets, you know, they're still without Kyrie Irving, and who knows when or if he'll come back because of his refusal to get vaccinated. But I think the Bulls have checked all the boxes where they've gotten the best out of DeMar DeRozan, Alex Caruso, and Nikola Vucevic, besides that, you know, hiccup with him being out because of the health and safety protocols, while also making sure that Zach LaVine is Zach LaVine. And I think that has been, you know, a tremendous reflection on all those players involved, because you know, you have a bunch of skilled players that are arriving, in addition to Lonzo Ball, that are trying to prove themselves and have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder because of things not working out with their previous team. But they had an incumbent all-star with Zach LaVine, who had not received an extension up to this point. And so I wondered, would there be a little bit of a, you know, some personalities to sort out? And I think, you know, at least some X's and O's to sort out. And so far, it's been pretty smooth sailing. It's been impressive, to say the least, as far as how they've been playing.
How do you explain their ascent from last year? I mean, they had Vucevic and LaVine last year. They had Lonzo Ball and DeMar DeRozan, and things are much better. How do you explain that?
Yeah, well, I think it taps into, obviously, the upgrade of the roster. So talent itself always gives you a chance. I think a lot of it's also the personalities, where when you look at the new additions with Lonzo Ball and Alex Caruso and DeMar DeRozan specifically, they're really kind of put your head down and work kind of guys. They're a little more introverted than extroverted. And also, you know, they're coming off of playing for teams that had either recognized their value but didn't want to pay them monetarily, a la Alex Caruso, or, you know, players like DeMar and Lonzo, where, you know, the previous team saw their talent but didn't necessarily feel like they were a good fit. So all those guys have something to prove. They're playing with an edge. And I think as a result of that, you're really seeing them excel defensively. And because of the amenable personalities that they have, I think that that has translated them not having issues of, you know, how do you share one basketball? So it's been a really good combination.
What did you see from them in the Lakers win that really impressed you?
I saw what did I see from them specifically when they beat the Lakers?
Yes.
Well, I couldn't help but think about Alex Caruso, because this was the homecoming for him. And it was really illustrative that his stat numbers itself weren't really that high, but his plus minus was out of this world. And that is what Alex Caruso does. And it was also, I think, a painful reminder for the Lakers of what they missed. And you know what? They only had themselves to blame for that, because Alex Caruso wanted to come back. Even when he got the generous offer that the Bulls handed to him, he wanted to see, is there any way not only could the Lakers match, but, you know, maybe even meet some sort of halfway in between, because he really liked being with the Lakers, winning a championship with them 2 years ago. And the fact that, you know, that's the organization that placed trust in him as a two-way player in the G League. And, you know, the Lakers frankly just said no, and their actions spoke that they cared more about saving on their luxury tax bill than keeping a core player on a championship team. And look, I know I'm not mistaken here of who Alex Caruso is. It's not like he's an all-star player. The Lakers' fortunes, or lack thereof, this season will rest on how healthy and effective LeBron James, Anthony Davis are. But, you know, within all the different variables that the Lakers were sifting through, they should have just crystallized it. It's all about what can you do to maximize LeBron James's championship window, and what can you do to make life easier for him on the court? And Alex Caruso checks all those boxes. So very inexcusable that they didn't keep him. And so I think because of that storyline, I think it just brought all those elements you know, into a reminder and wrapped things up in a bow of just kind of the symbolism of it all.
How close is that window to closing for LeBron?
Well, it's an interesting question, because I've learned in this past decade, you don't bet against LeBron James. He's still a really good player, but look, he's turning 37 December 30th. You know, he has been dealing with a number of injuries this season, and now he's out because of the COVID health and safety protocols. So, you know, he hasn't had a lot of court on court time. He hasn't had a lot of time to get the chemistry going with Russell Westbrook and 11 other new players. And he hasn't had that time to build a rhythm. And so I don't ever want to bet against LeBron. But the reality is, even if he plays at his best, the Lakers have had so many issues that I don't even think that's enough. So I'll be honest, I don't bet against LeBron, but I think as far as the championship window, I think it's shut. I think that these are the amount of wings, rings that he's already won, which is four, and that's a great accomplishment. But knowing how LeBron is, he certainly wanted to get five, six, maybe even beyond.
Mark Medina here on Sports Talk Chicago. Mark, how do you explain what's happened to LeBron's window? Why is it closed this year for the Lakers?
Well, I think it has more to do with the Lakers than him. And maybe it partly relates to him in general, where, look, when the Lakers talked about getting Russell Westbrook and revamping the roster, they sold it as, hey, Russell Westbrook's a great all-star talent, and he's someone that could make life easier if and when LeBron and AD are hurt or need rest, or at least have the burden lifted during the regular season. But LeBron played a role in this. And so, you know, I think LeBron's partly to blame, the fact that he's proven that he's an A-plus player, but his GM skills aren't the greatest. But I think the bigger thing is you have a front office that can say no to players, even if it is LeBron James. And so the championship window has more to do with the roster construction than any of LeBron James's physical decline. I mean, you don't want to discount the injuries, but in fairness to him, when he has been on the court, he's been playing really well. And I don't want to act like, you know, he's 21 years old, but I haven't noticed anything from the notice, from the observant eye that shows that he's dropped off. But it is a reality that he has missed a lot of games. And even when he has been on the floor, the Lakers just haven't been good. They're a team that's always been barely above or below 500. And, you know, that might be enough to get in the play-in tournament or the playoffs, but that's not what the Lakers are all about. They're about championships.
What's your evaluation of the Russell Westbrook move today?
I think it's a failure. And look, hindsight, you can always say it's 2020 when the move was made. I thought that there was a recipe for it to work out. But I also saw the high risk nature of it because of Russ's playing style. The fact that, you know, the Lakers, even if they fulfill positional needs with their outside shooting and wing defense, that it's a lot of new players and a lot of the players are old. So there is this recipe of what's happened so far, of a lot of injuries and a lot of hiccups of Russ finding his comfort level. And I put a lot of blame not only on the roster construction, but on Russ himself. I mean, look, the Lakers were willing to roll the dice on this because they thought, if nothing else, even when you account for hiccups, possible injuries, other new players, he's an all-star player and he's had regular season success that could at least lead to wins. And that hasn't happened on a consistent basis. And even if you add in the injuries and the new players, circumstances define role player success. It shouldn't define all-star player success. And the last I checked, Russell Westbrook should be an all-star player. So he hasn't lived up to that, to say the least.
Is that a reflection on potentially a decline for Russell Westbrook? Is his hype overbearing when it comes to his performance and what he's put on the court?
You know, I think in fairness to Russ, he still plays at a fast speed. I think that's one of the benefits when he has played good games that the Lakers have enjoyed, the fact that they are getting up and down faster and getting some easy baskets. So I didn't notice a physical decline, but I think where the rubber meets the road is he's a guy that even if he says he has the right intentions of wanting to make this work and wanting to, you know, give himself the best chance to get his first title, it's hard for him to adjust his style of play. He doesn't know how to play without committing a lot of turnovers. He doesn't know how to play without missing a lot of shots and kind of being inefficient. And again, if you're an all-star player, you're supposed to be able to not only make adjustments to account for when you get older and how to be more efficient, but you also have to know how to make adjustments when you're playing with new players. I mean, when you're looking at, you know, LeBron James, for example, through his warts or roster construction warts, he's had a track record of still just being able to rely on his sheer will and talent. to kind of cover up those shortcomings and use his will to just drag his teams through success. And, you know, Russ hasn't been able to do that. So, and I think that's the thing that's even more interesting and maybe even more concerning, that it's not a health issue. It is a style of play issue. And Russ so far has shown much more misses in being able to do that than makes this season.
Did you see this coming when they signed him?
Well, as I mentioned before, you know, I had written that this was a high-risk move, but I also thought it could be a high-reward move. I thought that it could work. I was leaning more on the optimistic side because of Russ's stage in his career, the fact that, you know, you have LeBron James and Anthony Davis, and they're healthier. But I didn't think that they would have the record the way it is. I thought that, you know, assuming that there would be some chemistry hiccups and a few injuries here or there, even with LeBron, that they would be a team that would be, you know, third or fourth in the West and, you know, having a comfortable win-loss record. And here that's not the case. I mean, they're a team that has yet to have a dominant win against anyone. And the games that they've won, it's been because they've scratched and clawed their way to them. And there's been a few overtime games, and most of those overtime games were against bad teams. The only game that I was left, you know, kind of feeling impressed with their play was against the Miami Heat. That's the only game out of the entire season. That's not a good thing. You have, you know, three all-stars and four players that were on the NBA top 75 list. And, you know, if you're a Dwight Howard fan, maybe even five that should have been on the list. So, yeah, it's inexcusable.
Let me ask you this. Who's the team to beat right now in the Western Conference?
Yeah, flip a coin between the Warriors and the Suns. You know, I know that the Suns beat the Warriors, you know, yesterday, but, you know, it's such an even matchup that I think that they're destined to meet each other in West Finals, seven-game series, and it comes down to, you know, the pecking order of who's the healthiest, whose chemistry is the best. But, you know, they have continuity from top to bottom, a lot of good experience and top-heavy talent, you know, with the Warriors, Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson coming back, with the Suns, you know, Chris Paul and Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton, but they have a lot of good role players that have, you know, been on the team in previous years that know what their role is and do it well, and they both have great head coaches, Steve Kerr with the Warriors, Monty Williams with the Suns, that, you know, as of now, I would give the edge to the Warriors, just knowing that if and when they be in the playoffs, they're going to have Klay Thompson on that team now. But yeah, you could really make a case for either. It should be a fun matchup.
Who do you see in the finals? Is it too early to make that prediction?
Well, you know, with the caveat that injuries are always a game changer, you know, all things being equal right now, I would say the Warriors go to the finals, and then it would be Brooklyn if Kyrie Irving ever gets the vaccine, and if not, I see the Bucks coming back. But yeah, we'll have to wait and see. And here's the thing, I mean, with the Nets, there's this cliche with 20-game sample sizes, that's a usual time that you can get a sense of what a team's all about and if they're heading the right direction. 20 games in and Kyrie Irving still hasn't gotten the vaccine, you know, like, I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't at all throughout this season. But, you know, he's unpredictable, so we'll see.
More to come with Mark Medina in just a moment. Stay tuned. This is Sports Talk Chicago. Medina, still here on Sports Talk Chicago. Mark, a few more questions before we finish up. First off, NBA.com, how did it happen?
Yeah, great opportunity. There was an opening. You know, we talked, and, you know, the stars kind of aligned that they were looking for a writer based in Los Angeles that can cover the scene nationally and also use LA as a home base. And that's what I was already doing anyway. at USA Today, and they're also looking for someone to do some TV work for them for NBA TV. And, you know, I had already done and still do that for Spectrum Sportsnet and NBC LA and occasionally on Fox Sports. So it was a win-win. So the more I got to know about their culture and the way they operate and the fact that there's, you know, a good comfort level of their editorial independence, you know, from the league, I thought it was, you know, too good of an opportunity to pass up. And so fortunately they felt the same way about me and presented an offer. And then, you know, I molded over and wound up taking it and really thankful and, you know, very grateful that that this all happened. It's been a blast.
How special is it to work for the NBA now?
Well, that's the thing. I don't work for the NBA. I work for NBA.com. It's not like Adam Silver's my sports editor, right? So, you know, frankly, I did have questions about that because, you know, I got into business, you know, not to be a public relations person. I got into business to be a sports writer with, you know, level of journalistic independence. And yeah, they had the same journalistic standards that my other former employers had. So, you know, I was pretty comfortable with it. So it's been fun. And you know, that being said, you know, there are layers to a relationship because, you know, it is the league website and, you know, they show the games on their channel. But yeah, Adam has a league to run. He doesn't get involved with what stories we do or don't write.
And Mark, before we finish up today, last question, what's the best soundbite you've gotten from a player?
Oh, wow. You know, the NBA has so many great personalities. It's hard to pick one. But, you know, in my time covering the NBA, I would say that, you know, Meta World Peace, Ron Artest, and Nick Young, I mean, they were walking quotes. They're very funny, you know, quotable, random, goofy. They would say off the wall things, but they're also interesting guys. So yeah, I would say those two were the most quotable. But to pick one out of all that, I guess it was, you know, the best one was, you know, when Ron Artest won the championship in 2010 with the Lakers, and he had his famous press conference where, you know, he was being goofy and getting so excited with a Wheaties box being on the press table. But then also, you know, I think shedding light on some really serious issues of, you know, thanking his psychologist and therapist and, you know, really shedding light on mental health. And, you know, I know the impact that has had on, you know, that issue itself with how it's opened the conversation. So that would probably be the most memorable because of the comedic value, but also the substance as well. But yeah, it's a fun league to cover because there's a lot of them.
Well, Mark, thank you so much for joining me. Always a pleasure to have you on. Best wishes at the new gig, and I'm sure we'll be catching up very soon to talk more NBA. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, really appreciate talking with you as always, and it's always a fun time.
Great talk there with Mark Medina. That'll do it for us today here on Sports Talk Chicago. Big thank you to Mark Medina himself, Matt Dubiel, WCKG, Jim DeTalbot, Tomorrow Entertainment for making this show a success. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluel. If you want to watch more of this show, search up Sports Talk Chicago, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, SportsTalkChicago.com. Another great show comes your way tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. Till then, stay safe. So long, everyone.
No! No! Mirror the turtle!